For the better part of 2 weeks, protesters have taken to the streets to demand justice for George Floyd and a number of other unarmed black Americans who have been killed by police. As part of the protest, demonstrators are putting pressure on city and state governments to reform law enforcement by defunding police or retooling departments or creating rules to make law enforcement more accountable. Some lawmakers are taking heed, including Congress members like Democratic Representative Ayanna Pressley and Independent Representative Justin Amash, who have introduced legislation to end a widespread rule known as qualified immunity that shields police from some lawsuits. Our next guest joins us to explain qualified immunity and how it's been used in the past. Ralph Grunewald is an assistant professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Law, Society, and Justice. Ralph, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thank you for having me, Rob.
Can you tell us what this is, this qualified immunity?
Yeah, so qualified immunity is a legal doctrine in the United States federal law that dates back to the late 1960s when the Supreme Court first kind of thought about it and established it. And this doctrine shields government officials from being held personally liable for discretionary actions performed within their official capacity. So we have, just to give you a little background, under Section 1983 of the United States Codes, that's the successor to the what's also known the Ku Klux Klan Act. We can hold public officials accountable for their actions, and it allows individuals to sue government officials for money damages when they violate their constitutional rights. So that means private individuals, if they're harmed, if their constitutional rights are violated, can sue the government official in the cases that we're discussing, police officers. And so the problem is that if you're in office, not just if you're a police officer, but if you may be a teacher, a firefighter, and you have to deal with many situations that ask you to use discretion. In the words of the Supreme Court, people and public officials need to have some kind of breathing room, and this has to be balanced with the right to sue and to, you know, pay for damages that you cause in the course of that action. And in the course of time, over history, starting in the 1960s, the qualified immunity doctrine was established. And it tries to kind of initially try to balance the interests of the individual officer and of the individual that claims harm. So it kind of shields the and protects, supposed to protect, wants to protect, and does protect the individual officer from lawsuits. That's the idea.
And to clarify, this is all about civil proceedings. This is lawsuits. This doesn't include, if I have this right, a possible criminal action against a police officer or the other public officials we're talking about here.
Right. Very good point. So this is all civil law, and we are talking about, so I should have explained when I use the term liability, it means civil liability for damages. This is on a completely different page than criminal liability. So we see in many cases that law enforcement, if they use excessive force, there is always two sides. There's the criminal side and there's the liability, the money, the financial side.
And you mentioned one of the arguments for this was when people have to act in the moment, you don't want them necessarily thinking about each action. Am I going to be sued for this? And I've seen another argument in favor of a generous qualified immunity protection is that, you know, sometimes, and we've seen this, sometimes people will file nuisance lawsuits against public servants that they don't like or have some sort of theoretical problem with. This is also intended in part as a protection from that. Do I have that right?
Yes, that's correct. So this is the term that I read as frivolous lawsuits against police officers and all sorts of like state official. The policy motivation underlying the qualified immunity defense is kind of threefold. You find three main arguments that are, you know, the foundation of the qualified immunity defense is first, it would be unfair to hold officials liable for violations in unclear situations, unclear factually, like at the time of when things happened, and in regards to the actual constitutional rights, whether or not they were actually violating a law or not. The second point that's been made is the possibility that fear of liability would overly constrain government action. So it pretty much says, well, if I always have to fear that I'm going to be sued for doing this or that, then I kind of freeze and I can't do my job properly. And the third one is if we don't want to, or the doctrine, the immunity doctrine says, well, we don't want to expose government officials to the substantial cost of litigation. So because if, you know, they do something, somebody thinks it's not right, and then there's litigation, and we know that's time consuming and costly, etc. So this is the three main arguments that are made to support qualified immunity.
Talking to Ralph Grunewald from the UW-Madison Center for Law, Society, and Justice, talking about this idea of qualified immunity, lawsuit protections for police. That's mostly who is being talked about right now, and some other public servants. Want to give a listen now to Democratic Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey speaking on NPR. He said he wants to seek some kind of balanced approach to the issue. Here's a listen.
Of course, when a police officer is acting justly in accordance with their training and community mandates, as a former mayor, we will represent those police officers and there will be legal support for them. But when police officers have so egregiously violated the civil rights of individuals, there should be some kind of level of accountability through the civil courts.
So there's the idea out there, and I think the implication there, that maybe qualified immunity could be okay, but the balance has shifted too far, that it makes it too difficult to sue police officers or other protected servants. What do you think of that argument?
Yeah, I think you're perfectly right, Rob. So over time, the Supreme Court has heightened the bar, raised the bar to actually get some form of damages in those civil rights lawsuits. It's almost impossible. I don't want to walk you through the Supreme Court history of the case law, but right now we are in a situation where it's extremely difficult to be successful in a lawsuit. And I don't know, maybe I should just briefly mention it. The crucial point is what you have to do to be successful in to overcome qualified immunity is that you have to prove that at the time of the, let's say, potential police misconduct, that there was a clearly established law that the officer was violating. And us being in a common law system, you have to find, as an attorney, you have to find a situation, a precedent, an existing case that is almost the same as what is happening in your case. And that's almost impossible to find cases like this. And courts cut you off right away. And this leads to a lot of frustration.
And if I have this right, this is something qualified immunity that comes up early in a trial, can shut off the trial, and then ensures, in effect, that that particular case doesn't become a precedent for the future. So it's hard to establish precedent in the first place.
Exactly. Very good. That's a good point. It's sometimes called the catch-22 of this kind of civil rights litigation, because or you could also say, I've read this in a very often cited law journal article, that the first person who is trying to establish the precedent will never win, because if you're the first, you will never find a similar case, and therefore can't be successful.
We continue our conversation about qualified immunity and why some lawmakers are calling to either abolish the practice or tip the scales a little bit when it comes to lawsuits and police departments. Our guest is Ralph Grunewald, assistant professor at the UW-Madison Center for Law, Society, and Justice. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you been following the debate over qualified immunity? Where do you fall on it? Do you think it's a needed protection for police and other public servants, or do you think it has gone too far? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Now, in response to some calls for changing this, the executive branch of the Trump administration opposed to changes. Here's White House Press Secretary Kayleigh McEnany answering a reporter's question about reforms being presented and President Trump's stance.
He's looking at a number of proposals, but there are some non-starters in there, I would say, particularly on the immunity issue. You had AG Barr saying this weekend he was asked about reduced immunity, and he said, I don't think we need to reduce immunity to go after the bad cops because that would result certainly in police pulling back, which is not advisable. So he hasn't reviewed the legislation, but AG Barr, as a member of the administration, noted this prior to the proposal coming out.
So that concern that take away immunity, you're going to incentivize police being maybe less proactive or maybe even not going into policing in the first place. Do you think there's a valid concern there?
I'm not so sure about that concern. So everything we know about policing and decision making, it's not that if an officer in a situation probably does not think there are studies on this and we know that officers do not think about personal liability in situations of stress. So I don't think this is a fairly old argument that's been made. And studies have shown that law enforcement officers do not think about the threat of being sued when performing their duties. And also on that note, often officers are indemnified. That means although they are found personally liable, the state or the government picks up, or the union or a different organization picks up the liability. So it's not that an officer would actually have to pay the damages if they're found liable. It's somebody else who does. So that argument is it's made often, but from what I can see in the literature, it's not the soundest.
Now, this is a big bar, a big hurdle for lawsuits against police officers and other people protected by qualified immunity to even get to some kind of trial. Do we know what happens when cases like this, trying to hold, say, police officers liable for civil rights violations, for example, what happens when they actually do manage to get to trial?
Yes. So when they do manage to get to trial, chances have of being found liable have changed over the years. And I think we are now at I think the number I have in mind is like 57% of officers are found liable, if I'm not mistaken. But it's very few cases that actually get to court.
Is there relevant information, I guess, from the old days before qualified immunity, or are we comparing apples and oranges there?
The thing is, yes, there is data, and the rates have been have changed over time. But when you mention apples and oranges, what we have to take into consideration is the varying and the changed review standard by the court. And so when the Supreme Court makes a decision, it trickles down to states' courts who are handling or who might be handling those cases. And if we change the standard, that has an effect on the outcome of a case. And it's gotten easier to make the qualified immunity argument, especially since 2009. And so this kind of changed the ratio of cases that are successful and aren't.
In our last couple minutes, there are a lot of calls for a lot of different kinds of police reform going on right now around the country. What kind of issues are you watching for in particular, qualified immunity or beyond?
So I think that qualified immunity, it's an important topic, but it can only be part of a whole reform package that we need. I believe, and the listeners might have picked an accent, I'm German, and I have a German law degree, and no police officer in Germany is ever immune from liability. However, what is also different is the kind of training officers get. I see, and we know, that particularly people of color are vulnerable under the raised bar of qualified immunity. There is no recourse. There's nothing they can. There's not this kind of justice that you would want to have. And it's a good idea to think about it. And I'm And we should also maybe briefly mention that the Supreme Court is taking up a couple, maybe taking up a couple of qualified immunity cases, because the Supreme Court, some justices have been very critical of the way qualified immunity is handled, has been handled. So if it's on the legislative level, it's not working out, there is still the court route that could be successful. However, I'd say qualified immunity is one part of a reform package that is necessary, but it goes beyond qualified immunity. This is civil liability. In my eyes, once we are on the lawsuit level, things have gone wrong anyway. So whether or not a person who has lost someone to an official action, if they get money or not, that's important, but we'd rather not be there and rather have well-trained police that are very good in de-escalation techniques and are racially aware. That's what we wish for. So it's a great thing to do. It's good to think about it, and it's important. But at the same time, it must be part of a bigger picture of reform.
Ralph, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Rob.
Ralph Grunewald is an assistant professor at the UW-Madison Center for Law, Society, and Justice. He joined us today for a look at qualified immunity, its impact on policing, and why some lawmakers want to get rid of the practice in the light of ongoing protests over the death of George Floyd.